Rock and Nation podcast. We're back for another episode of Dive Cuts.
Yeah, we're on 21.
What are we on? Episode 21 at this point? Episode 21, wow. All the way in, it is Money March 1st. We're going to hear from Matt Harris, myself, and we're going to talk some Mizzou hoops. Matt, how are you?
I'm well. I can see daylight coming, much like the rest of the Missouri program on the SEC season, and I would just like the postseason to get here as soon as possible. Looking forward to the SEC grind being over.
It is a grind, and one that I think, as I was sort of making my way through, you know, the entire second half of the Ole Miss game, I was sort of taking stock, I think, in the weirdness that the SEC tends to kind of create, you know, Saturday's results obviously being weird again. Missouri was off, which was nice. So it allowed me to just sort of sit back and work on that piece while just sort of take in some other results. There are some weird things that happened. So Alabama won. They officially clinched the league. Arkansas kind of blew the doors off LSU in the second half. Tennessee lost again. Ole Miss lost to Vanderbilt. South Carolina went into Georgia and just beat the tar out of them. What am I missing here?
I don't know what else. I don't know what you're missing here, but the
Kentucky lost to Florida. So that was maybe the least surprising result. I guess Alabama winning at Mississippi State wasn't all that surprising, although it wasn't all that easy. I think they Mississippi State had it down to like 3 at one point, and then Jalen Johnson I think took 3 straight 3-pointers, all of which missed. Like they had the ball on like 3 different possessions, the chance to whittle the lead down, and they were doing a really good job of breaking Alabama down off the dribble, getting to the ball around the rim. I mean, Mississippi State, as you know, has great size, so they were being effective at getting to the rim, and Jalen Johnson decided he was just going to be the hero and missed all 3 opportunities, and Alabama was able to get a bucket on the other end after his last attempt and extend the lead, and that was it. Good night.
Not like you have 2 capable guards that can play off the bounce and get into the mid-range and be creative there at all. Got to just settle for
2 capable guards, and also like
a pretty good big.
You know, like Tolu Smith has been really good around the rim. I mean,
there were three other options.
Playing pretty well. Like I think Jalen Johnson chucking 3s, and like one of them was like even on a fast break. I think at that point Mississippi State had like no points off the fast break, and he's pulling up for 3. Oh, it was something. But yeah, so another wild day, and so it's such a grind, and you and I were kind of talking before we came on air, like all these teams know each other so well, they see each other. I think one of the reasons why I was kind of skeptical of Tennessee sort of taking some big step kind of coming into the season was, I mean, obviously one, we were concerned about their ball handling, they didn't really have a true point guard. But they were only 10-8 last year. You know, a couple years ago when they returned everybody, and they were awesome. Like they were awesome the year before, and brought everybody back. So they did that this year, and they brought in these 2 5-star freshmen. But they were only okay last year. Like they were middle of the pack in a decent league. So I just sort of. And because the SEC is so weird and they like to eat their own, it's not surprising. It is a little surprising for me to see Tennessee struggle as much as they have. But, to see them at, basically what's going to end up being like, 10-8 or 11-7, it's not that surprising.
The difference between the SEC, the perception of the league being solid versus really, really strong is the fact that Tennessee and Kentucky have struggled relative to expectations. I think that's sort of my takeaway is, as we've gone through the year, or at least to the first couple of weeks of the conference, but it looked like Tennessee was going to live up to the billing and at least offset Kentucky not being very good, and you might have two, you know, top 10 KenPom teams and then, you know, four or five that were going to be in the top 30. And that really hasn't materialized. Kentucky didn't get right like we maybe would have thought they would. Just the structure of this year has not been good. The roster construction's been questionable there, obviously, despite the raw talent and the material that Cal had on hand. But I think you and I talked about it earlier today, and as we get to the end of the SEC slate, the league has probably in some ways conformed to our expectations at the top. I think we thought there would be kind of this cluster of teams after Kentucky and Tennessee that would all kind of be comparable. Alabama broke away and was by far the best team this year, but Arkansas, Florida, LSU, Missouri, Tennessee's been worse than we thought, but Tennessee's kind of been in that mix. There's been five or six teams that have all kind of been clustered together. And relatively speaking, the SEC's got five KenPom top 30 teams. The Big Ten has seven. The Big 12 has four. The SEC's just lacking another one or two top-end teams. And again, to bring it back around, that's where the relative struggles of Tennessee and Kentucky have factored in. And I think really, you know, keeping this league from being viewed as one of the – this being a three-conference discussion for the best in the country. But there's some depth in this league. We've seen that bear out. And this has been a year where home court advantage has been really, really weak, and I think that's contributed to – it's been weak across the sport, but particularly in the SEC. So it's been a year where I think we've seen some results that, one, we've seen blowouts, we've also seen just – some teams get on runs and then maybe someone has a COVID pause. Maybe, you know, they hit a particularly tough stretch of the schedule and they yo-yo back the other way. It's been hard to sort of see a consistent progression of things. But as we get to the end and I look at the standings, you know, you could have told me in the preseason that Alabama would be a top three team and I would have believed it. Arkansas, under the right conditions, would have probably been a top four team for me. Florida and LSU have been about what I expected them to be. In overall, Missouri as well. Yeah. Ole Miss has rallied to be better than I thought. Particularly in the past couple weeks, it's credit to Kermit Davis. Mississippi State's been better than I thought.
Up until Saturday, where they lost to Vanderbilt. Yeah. And I mean, really, like I'm a big fan of like what Stack's doing, but they lost to Vanderbilt without Scottie Pippen and without Dylan DeCee.
Yeah, that's that. That.
So if you read my Vanderbilt preview, those are the two guys that I featured. Because I'm a big fan of what Stack is building with that program. Like, I really think you can build around those two
guys.
You
and Jeff Goodman would have vehement words of disagreement. But
did I send you the tweet that he was talking about his reporting and about there being like 60 officials for the NCAA tournament and Norlander totally just like responded. Like, dude, I reported that 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, the Ole Miss, aside from stubbing its toe there, had been better down the stretch. Kentucky's been worse than we thought, but, you know, there was a... I think you would...
But really, like Kentucky being bad, and, like, this was kind of my point, like, Kentucky's still pretty good.
Yeah, they're still 52nd in KenPom. They're close to being a top three team. They're trying to figure it out. State's been better than I thought. Credit to Tolu Smith, Iverson Molinar, and DJ Stewart for all getting better in the offseason. DJ Stewart's playing his way onto draft boards even, so kudos to that guy. Georgia's been about what I thought. Auburn, about what I thought, even though they've had like the inconsistent presence of Sharif Cooper there, that through no fault of his own, through injuries and the eligibility stuff. Carolina's been worse than I thought, which is a surprise to me. I thought they had a good backcourt and a nice mix of guards to be good there, but it sounds like COVID really just threw that team for a loop and just absolutely hammered that program. We know A&M just got absolutely demolished by COVID outbreaks and COVID pauses. Vanderbilt is one of those deals, like you said, you got to look through the margins there. I think Stack's building it the right way. The question is, can he start to get guys? He's got 2 4-star guys in his 2022 class already, but can he start to put together enough pieces to begin to move into that 7, 8, 9 win range next season? Because I think that's something they're going to want to see. But as I look up and down the standings, again, the only real surprises to me are that Tennessee and Kentucky are a little bit lower. Everything else, when I look at the pecking order, makes sense to me. So I think that's the funny thing is, you know, we sort of early on in the season, we thought this kind of looks a little bit weird and these results are a little bit all over the place. And now, sure enough, you know, it's kind of settled out to where we thought it might be.
I don't think like, and you know, again, like you don't necessarily project like Alabama running away from everybody else. Like that's not anything that we're talking about. But Alabama being good was definitely something that was on the table. I think I had them, 5th, and you had them 4th, and we were kind of talking up like their ability if they picked it up on defense, which they very clearly did. I think if they picked it up on defense, like I thought they could, I think they're probably 3rd or 4th in this league. I don't think I ever expected them to run up to, you know, being the like a top 5 defense in adjusted defense.
No, I thought they might get to top. I thought if they cared, adjusted defense. I thought if they put it together, they could be a top 25 defense. And I thought with the offense weapons they had on hand, that was going to be a top 4 team. The defensive improvement there, and especially how they go about defending, it is impressive there because they've managed to blend some tempo with the kind of an NBA inspired dribble drive motion offense.
Well, they don't really have any rim protection. No. Like, they've got a couple guys with some decent size, but both Rojas and we're really getting sidetracked here with SEC talk. But both Rojas and Reese are like not athletic guys. They're not shot blockers. They're positional defenders. Their best shot blocker is probably Herb Jones.
And that's where the pack line comes into play because they do such a good job clogging up the middle and, you know, really gumming things up for you and keeping driving lines closed off, that they've done a nice job and they've been able to compensate for that. This is a way of us saying that, and for me saying, Missouri fans are probably irked. There's a segment of the fan base, I'm not going to guesstimate how big it is, that's absolutely livid that they've, you know, slid from 4th all the way down to a projected 8-8 finish. If you were to say to me that Missouri was going to be 8-8 after 16 games and they would not have played, you know, Vandy or A&M, I would have said that makes sense. That,
yeah, like we both had them at 10-8.
I think I had them 10-8 or 9-9. I can't remember, but yeah, they're on.
You might have had them 9-9. I probably talked you into 10-8.
Yeah, I think in my final prediction I had them 9-9. So if they go 500 this week, that boom, they're at 500 for the league this year. I think I had them winning 15 or 16 regular season games. They're close to that. They're on, and you said, I think if things went well for them this year, they'd be a top 50 or 60 team at worst. That's where they are. How it's happened has probably not been one experience that Missouri fans want to live through again. It's been, as we've said a lot, a high variance experience where they are prone to getting blown out in some games and then winning some close games down the stretch against quality opponents. But they've put together a resume that's going to put them in the NCAA tournament. Where they get seeded could probably be a 7 all the way down to a 9. That's what this week's going to be about. We can talk about that. But, you know, I think as we transition into looking at this team, they're going to hit, I think, the expectations that you and I had for them. The methodology, though, has not been one that I think has jived with a portion of the fan base, though.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that sort of extends to how things played out. I think that's one of the things that I mentioned in my Sunday piece, which I'll give a plug to for people that if you hadn't read that, please do. I spent a lot of time on it. It's like 3,000 words with videos and all kinds
Welcome
of stuff.
Welcome to my life, Sam. Isn't it fun?
Yeah.
Isn't it fun doing that? Extensive possession.
Anytime you want to do those on top of doing you know, study halls and breaking news and all that kind of stuff, let me know. But so I think the way I kind of wrapped it up was, and we kind of talked about this privately, but Missouri basically got everything to go their way to beat Bradley, like down the stretch. I mean, obviously, they didn't. They got everything to go kind of against them for the first 35 minutes or whatever it was. You know, they couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, even around the rim. You know, but that game very clearly broke their way. The game against TCU very clearly broke their way. It was the only way it could have broken that worked out for Missouri, and it did. And kind of the same thing with Alabama. Like, Alabama closes the gap, and then Missouri comes up with the plays that they need down the stretch. And this has been kind of a theme for this team all year. So they had two games recently where things did not break their way. And Ole Miss on Tuesday was one of them. Arkansas in overtime was the other. Would you be willing to trade off like a home win against Arkansas and a home win against Mississippi if it meant that you had to give back the Bradley and the TCU wins?
No, because those cripple you. Those are
That's what I'm saying. Like if you're looking at it from a strictly NCAA tournament sheet way, like losing to Bradley at home, losing to TCU at home, those are really bad losses. Like that's a quad three and a quad four loss. Losing to Mississippi, Ole Miss at home, and losing to Arkansas at home right now is a quad one and a quad two loss. Like, they're way better losses to take. So if you're like, the reason that Missouri is safely in the field is because when you look at all the resumes across the country, Missouri's record of being undefeated in quad three and quad four is going to like keep them in the tournament at all costs, because they also picked up as many quad one wins as they have. So when you factor in the fact that they have zero quad three, zero quad four losses, and they have what are we at, like six wins?
Quad one wins going into the week.
Like that's a tournament resume. Like boom, put them in. And that's why, like, you know, Joe Lunardi, when he tweets it out, is just like, yes, they're in the field. Like, stop worrying about it. But if you flip those results and now you have a quad three and a quad four loss, you do have
on top of blowout losses, on top of some blowout losses in your quad one and quad two.
Yeah. Like now you're looking at, okay, maybe this team still has some work to do to get into the tournament. And I think like that's the thing that a lot of people maybe aren't quite realizing about how all these sort of resumes work. And look, I'm as frustrated as anybody by losing to Ole Miss. I mean, Ole Miss is like the last thing from a traditional basketball power, and Missouri just can't beat them, and it's frustrating as hell. Like, I get it.
But as a practical matter, it does not hurt.
Yeah, like, and you would very clearly rather be able to beat Ole Miss at home. It didn't happen, and it came down to a few key possessions down the stretch. Those are the possessions that Missouri made against TCU. They made against Bradley. They did not make them against Ole Miss. So that's how the loss happens. I still contend that if Tillman would have played, they probably are able to beat Arkansas at home. You know, maybe that's not the case because maybe they don't shoot whatever it was, 40% from three. You know, but at this point, the way Arkansas is playing, like, no one's going to look at that loss as a bad loss. You lost in overtime to a team that
is pushing for a protected seed.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're shooting up the rankings. They're on a really hot streak. They've picked up two more, like, really huge home wins. You're the only team that has beaten that team in their home building. Like, I think that Missouri's done a lot of good work. And you and I have constantly been preaching about how this team is, I mean, it still has its issues. But on the right night, if they get the right draw, I think this is a team that can still sort of push into the second weekend of the tournament. So,
and this is a good week again. You know, there were some folks last week, I don't need to say that were wondering whether it was better for them to get Vandy or A&M as a makeup date, and I think that's laughable because, one, by the time the Ole Miss result happened, regardless of you know, what came after that, they're going to need a lot of help to make a push to get back to the four line. They got some this weekend. But in order...
You mean the four line and
the SEC to get to a double bye in Nashville, they were going to need help. And there were some results this weekend that helped them out on that front.
There was no result that was going to get them back to a four line
NCAA tournament. Not even a five line.
I mean, maybe if they run the table in Nashville, you know, and ran the table at the end, I think they probably could have made it up, but even that was
going to be on the far edge of what was going to be there.
Yeah, I think that would have been unlikely.
Because what's going to happen now is the net rankings are essentially a way to organize those resumes. So if you've got two teams with comparable quad one and quad two results, the net ranking is a kind of a default mechanism to look at, okay, we have two teams with similar results, but here's kind of what, you know, an adjusted efficiency rate basis tells us about how those teams have played. So comparable resumes, but this team has played better in assembling it, so we're going to seed them higher. So that's where the net's going to hurt them, is if they get into a seed line debate with somebody else on the 6 or 7 line, you know, they're going to go, okay, well, that team's got a better net ranking, so they might be more inclined to seed. But for the SEC tournament, it was going to be hard to get back to a double bye. And if you're going to have to play in the quarterfinals anyway, either side of the draw, you're going to get a quad. You're probably not going to get a quad one opponent in that first game. You know, the hope is that you're going to be able to take advantage of the quad one win opportunity in, you know, the quarterfinal round. If you're a 5 or a 6 seed, maybe your path is a little bit different. But to me, the big thing this week was get 2 quad one win opportunities and try and rehabilitate your resume and try and at least get one more quad one win. So you get into the, so when they go into the, you know, when the selection committee is sitting down in a couple of weeks, you know, if Missouri's gone out in the quarterfinals, for example, they'll say, okay, this team has hit some bumpy stretches at the end of the season, but they were without Tillman for 2 games. They've still got 7 quad one wins. You know, they've still played a tough schedule. You know, we still think they're a team that, you know, merits being on the 7 line. That's really the hope this week. And to get 2 quad one win opportunities this week gives them a shot to stay in that group of like 8 or 9 teams that have 6+ wins in the quad one part of the quad one sector. So that's what to me was this week was about, was just having the opportunity to do some rehab work on their resume. And SEC seeding was sort of secondary.
And as I kind of pointed out, like, I mean, the benefit of playing 2 quad one games.
And there's no bad losses. No bad losses.
Right, right. I mean, like, even if you come out of this 0-2, it doesn't really hurt you. It might bump you a seed, but you're probably losing out, like, you know, if you're a 7 seed and LSU is an 8 seed, it probably swaps those or something like that. Like, it doesn't really hurt you losing to Florida, losing to LSU, the way it hurts you losing to Texas A&M and losing to Vanderbilt. And not that I'm not the guy that worries about losing to Texas A&M, losing to Vanderbilt. I just don't care about the SEC tournament, well, much really at all. Like, I really don't care about any conference tournament other than the fact that I just want to watch some basketball games and enjoy basketball games. But I really don't care like about Missouri being in a good position for that tournament because they don't need the help in the tournament to get to the NCAA tournament. So I feel like I just said tournament a lot of times.
The only reason you care about a conference tournament if you're a high major team is, one, if you are fighting for a 1 or a 2 line seed, if you need as many opportunities to sell the committee on, you know, why you deserve a critical line bump there, or if you are a team that is desperately trying to get from first four out to in the field and avoid a play-in game. Like, it literally matters at each end of the spectrum. Now, some teams will play themselves up some seed lines, some teams will go on runs, but like, as a functional matter, to me, they matter more for the teams at the extremes of the seed of the S curve and the seed list. If you're a high major team,
yes, yeah. And as we've said, like, Missouri is not in danger at this point of missing the tournament. And I really think like once they knocked Texas A&M and Vanderbilt off their schedule, like I feel like the ability of Missouri to miss the tournament altogether has been removed. So, you know, with that said, like, I really don't care where they're seated. I don't really care what happens in the SEC tournament. I'd like to, you know, I'd like them to win a few games in the NCAA or the SEC tournament just because it'd be nice. But it, to me, it doesn't, if they lose in the first game, I'm really not going to care very much. Because the goal for this team is always going to be get to the NCAA tournament and win a game. Like, if they can win two, great. But get there and win one. And then, you know, like whatever happens from there, like happens, but I'm not going to really worry if, you know, Missouri is an eight seed and they get, you know, bounced by whoever in the first round, like whatever. You know, that's where I am mentally on the SEC tournament.
So, two games at Florida on Wednesday night. KenPom.
Yeah, we should probably get into like preview on these, right?
Florida on Wednesday, 32% win probability there. 5-point line based on KenPom's algo. Then LSU senior day on Saturday. A legit 50-50 toss-up with Missouri as a 1-point favorite at Mizzou Arena. If you,
maybe I'm crazy. I like their odds of beating Florida at Florida better than I do LSU at home.
I'm sort of the opposite. I think Florida's kind of built for the is built a little bit better to challenge them. LSU's can be a death machine offensively, but I think it's so poor at times on the ball defensively with some of its key personnel, and there's not really rim protection. So I think it's probably better for them to have LSU, just because I think structurally on the defensive end, this team can find a way to go toe-to-toe a little bit, scoring the ball with LSU.
Well, I do think Florida and Missouri are built very similarly. So we were kind of talking before the pod, but we can kind of rehash some of the stuff. One of the reasons why I really like, or like is probably the wrong term. One of the reasons why I think Florida has been better than maybe I expected them to be this year. And I'll put a caveat on that. Once Keontae Johnson was out of the picture. So Keontae Johnson was, I think, for a lot of people, the preseason SEC Player of the Year. A guy who was just terrific last year. And looked really, really good in the first few games of the year. But to me, like, I was always concerned. I mean, we've always kind of had some issues with Mike White and what he's been doing at Florida. They've never really had a guy that you could rely on around the basket. And I didn't think they were going to get that from Colin Castleton. Like, Colin Castleton was a non-factor at Michigan. So I didn't really think him transferring to Florida and suddenly he was going to become as good of a player as he's been for the Gators. And he's been terrific. So you couple Colin Castleton giving them something around the basket, which is more than what they were getting the last few years from really, you know, any cast of characters, along with the fact that Trey Mann has, in my opinion, kind of taken that step. He's become the kind of lead guard that I think people like I don't know that I didn't think he could get there, but certainly after the way he played last year, I was skeptical that that he was going to take this kind of a step, and he's taken that step. He's so much you know, better with the ball in his hands. He's so much better reading ball screens. He's so much better distributing the ball, and that has made Florida just a much better team overall, because you and I have both always liked Noah Locke, and he's a solid defensive guy. He's a great spot up shooter. Tyree Appleby brings a different element to that offense. Anthony Derugie is a guy who, like, I don't necessarily love Derugie and what he does, but he's athletic and he brings a energy to his defense. Scotty Lewis, I think a lot of people have been kind of let down by Lewis and his development, but he's still a guy who's athletic and is capable. He's more than capable defensively. So when you couple all these things, the one thing that they needed is they needed a reliable point guard, and they needed somebody in the middle. So they needed a big guy, and they got Trey Mann to be that guy. They got Colin Castleton to be that guy, and it's worked for Florida. So I think this is a team that I don't necessarily project them to be somebody who makes like a deep NCAA tournament run, but it would not surprise me to see them in the Sweet 16.
No, it's not a blessing that they lost Keontae Johnson, who what made him attractive was that you could flex him to the four spot and you could run basically a four guard lineup and not lose anything defensively in terms of length and on the glass defensively. And as we talked about in the preseason, he had just slowly fleshed out his game where he was more than just a slasher. But when he, you know, when he was sidelined, and we're glad that he's okay, obviously, but when he was sidelined, it opened up, I think, a little bit more of an opportunity for Mike White to define his backcourt more clearly and have a hierarchy there. I think the one thing I sort of worried about was, what were you going to do at that 3-4 spot with Trey Mann, you know, Scotty Lewis, and Keontae Johnson? How are you going to make those guys work either at combo guard or wing? Well, when Keontae Johnson went down, it made it easier for Trey Mann to slide into that lineup, and it, you know, eased Tyree Appleby away from having to be your de facto point guard, and then you had a little bit more of a theory of a case at that position, because now you could use Mann as a bigger lead guard. You could put Appleby off the ball, and he can shoot the ball. He can spot up. He's shooting 39% from deep in SEC play, but he's really good attacking closeouts and getting into gaps. And so now what you had was Trey Mann, who's playing in ball screens, can pull up, can get to the rim, has been really, really good distributing the ball, forces defenses to rotate. I think, you know, Andrew Nimbard was really good as a facilitator, but I think the scoring element that Mann brings really now forces defenses to rotate, to send help down and over, and it's widened open some gaps for a guy like Appleby, so he's not just, who's a little bit undersized at 6'1", 170, but he can get off the, he can play off the bounce a bit. Noah Locke is now a legitimate floor spacer. Derugi can kind of just, you know, crash the glass and, you know, be a cutter. And if you need to, you can run offense for Colin Castleton. You can post him. He's really, really good at posting. He doesn't get as many post touches as some other bigs in the league, but you can post him. He's been outstanding on the glass. He can hang out in the short corner. But what I think he's really also added a dimension to is he's great running rim to rim. And we've seen what that can do for you with a guy like Jeremiah Tillman. Now you're getting your big guy some touches on the move where he's not having to you know, bang and jostle in the post. And what it's allowed them to do is open up the tempo a little bit. And I think that's something that I always thought made Mike White's teams really, really good at Louisiana Tech, is they just played with some pep. They attacked early. And it seemed last year when they had Nimbard and Blackshear, everything was like, we've got to run our ball screen for Nimbard and let him try and make something happen. Then we got to get our touch to Kerry Blackshear. This year they're just going. And I think there's just a little bit more tempo. There's a little more pep. The backcourt makes a little bit more sense. And they've got Castleton who can, like you said, sort of anchor that low block position. And defensively, he gives them that rim protector as well. So it just, I think in a weird way, Keontae Johnson sort of unlocked the lineup that works best for what Mike's trying to do this year. And it's a, and all of them are going to guard. I think that's the other thing, is like, the question was never, would Florida guard? It was, were they going to have a consistent enough or a cohesive enough offense? And they still have some inconsistent spells in games, but they're far, far better at having an idea and a notion of what they want to do attacking and trying to score.
And so I just pulled up Trey Mann's KenPom page, and this is really kind of remarkable for a guy. So last year he played about 40% of the minutes. This year he's about 78. His offensive rating went from 86 to 106, and his possessions went from 19 to 25.
That's, you,
So, like, this is pretty incredible when you consider his offensive rating jumped 20 points per 100 possessions with an increase in usage, an increase in shots, and his turnover rate, when you consider the, you know, being a primary ball handler,
didn't really increase at all. It dipped by about like 2 percentage points, I think. Yeah.
And then his assist rate tripled. obviously better shooting numbers. He's at almost 40% from three this year. He's not great from 2-point range, but solid for a guard is 45%. He's improved from the free throw line. His free throw rate has improved. His fouls drawn rate has doubled. His foul committed rate has dropped. I mean, he's just a guy who has, like I said, he's taken that step. You know, when you talk about not everyone's progression is the same. Not everyone's on the same kind of schedule. And Trey Mann came in with like a lot of expectations. He was a 5-star guy. He was kind of known as a scorer at the high school level. And he just wasn't ready. But whatever he did this past offseason, man, he's a different player. He looks fantastic. So, yeah, I think Florida's a really interesting team. I do think this is a game that that, you know, if Missouri plays, I think, like they're capable of, if they defend like they're capable of, I think they can give Florida a lot of fits. We've seen lesser Missouri teams go down to Gainesville and certainly, you know, give Florida a tough time, but not really pull out those wins. But I think this is a team that could pull out that win.
My only pushback on that is those teams didn't quite have that piece in the middle. They didn't, you know, they had Clary Blackshear last year, but they didn't have a lot of depth behind him. This year they can throw Omar Payne out there. They can put DeRuji out there. They've got, I think, a pretty good front court, and that's going to be big against Tillman. They rim protect really well. I think they're fourth in block shot rate. You can get on the glass against them a little bit, but they'll foul too. I mean, I think that's your hope, is that you're going to be able to at least apply some pressure playing out of ball screens. You're going to get Castleton in some foul trouble. You're going to get some hand check calls on the perimeter, and maybe you're going to have to get into some inefficient lineups where you're playing, you know, Scotty Lewis a little more. Maybe you're having to put Quez Glover out there, who's 5'11", 182. Maybe you're having to get into the backcourt a little bit, and there's some drop-off there in terms of net rating and the impact that those guys have. But if the whistles are, you know, if they're letting them go a little bit, then I think this could be tough for Missouri, just because there's enough athleticism and toughness and rim protection there to make things difficult for them. So that's my only thought. And there are just some key matchups that I think they can hold their own. You know, you can put Mann on Pinson, and obviously Castleton can go on Tillman, and then you're just really hoping that, you know, Drew Smith can make something happen against Appleby or Locke. But we'll see what happens on that front. I just think Florida's going to be good enough defensively to make life difficult, and Missouri's going to need a little bit of help on the offensive end, maybe getting into the line or having some guys get on the glass. This seems like a game where I think Kobe Brown could be pretty big for them, just because he's shown the ability to kind of create second possessions, score. I think he could be a guy who could, you know, give DeRuji some fits at times, just from his ability to make plays from different spots on the floor. So I would sort of look maybe at Kobe Brown as an X factor in this one, if they need to get on the glass and create some second chance opportunities.
It's interesting. Like, I do think that Missouri does sort of match up against Florida defensively pretty mm-hmm. well, mainly because I do like, you know, Drew Smith as kind of a ball hawk and be able to defend Trey Mann. If he stays out of foul trouble, if Mark Smith is able to, play either Appleby or Locke and prevent them from getting clean looks, I think it kind of allows Missouri to maybe hide Pinson a little bit.
See, I worry that's going to be Appleby on Pinson, and we're going to see some poor closeouts and some questionable stuff, and that he's going to be able to get into some gaps, and that's going to cause some issues.
I think the advantage.
To me, I'd hide him on Locke, just because I think Locke's going to space, and I'd want more.
Right. Well, I was just going to say, like, I think like the advantage that you have is neither of those guys are particularly like big. Like with man is listed at 6'5". He's a bigger guard. Clearly, like, you're going to have your guys with size. You're going to have Drew Smith. You're going to have Mark Smith defending him a lot. You know, but with Locke and Appleby, those guys are like 6'3", 6'1", which is about the same size as Pinson. So it makes it a little easier to kind of, you know, as opposed to, you know, having, you know, X try to defend somebody who's you know, bigger and more athletic than he is. I think that helps them in that regard. So I don't know. It is one of those situations where, I mean, I also just have a sense of this team that's like they've played pretty poorly in a lot of their outings. But you know, coming off of a weekend of rest, you kind of get a sense that maybe they have a good night. And so I think that's also kind of plays into it, is when you get into the flow of the season. You know, Missouri is a team that's going to come in rested. Missouri is going to basically have had a week to prepare for Florida, and that might give them a little bit of an advantage. I don't necessarily know that it means they win, but I certainly think it's going to be a. I think that's why I think this game is probably the game that I would say is more likely for me that they would win than the home game against
LSU. If we're talking personnel, I do think LSU's more dangerous, because I look at what Cam Thomas can do, and is there a guy who can check Cam Thomas on this roster? Like, if you put Drew on him, that would be a logical thing, but then Javonte Smart's playing really well and can be a factor for them.
Well, and also, like one of the things that Thomas is really good at is drawing contact and drawing fouls. You know, so if you put
Drew
Smith on him, like, I mean,
you're asking for trouble there.
Drew likes to gamble, and so I would almost like, I would want to match him up with like Mark Smith. I think Mark Smith can get a little aggressive at times, but he's also a little bit better as far as just being a positional defender. So I think you could probably get away with that, and that might be your best hope.
Yeah, and I'm trying to look up what Javonte Smart has done in terms of turnover rate this year, because I can't remember where he's at. Smart's at 20%, so maybe Drew can get into him a little bit. But Smart's been a guy who I've been really impressed with. His efficiency rating, at least, and his ability as a shooter has really picked up this year. That was always sort of my critique of him, was that, you know, he shot the ball better in SEC play last season. He's now a 40% shooter from deep. Still kind of questionable as a two-point shooter, but he's made enough of an improvement at the free throw line. His free throw rate's ticked up enough that I think he's pretty good. His assist rate is a little higher, but his turnover rate's up. You know, I think you could hide Drew on him a little bit and give him some problems, and, you know, maybe create some turnovers and some transition opportunities. LSU, after that, I think you could put Andre Hyatt and X together and you're fine. The four spot is Darius Days versus Kobe Brown. I feel like that's a matchup where both are kind of similarly sized. And then really the matchup I think is going to be interesting to watch is what do they do with Trendon Watford on Jeremiah Tillman. Watford can defend the post, but he's still also kind of a guy who you and I have talked about it before, is not a traditional rim protector. He's not a consistent defender. It feels like that's an opportunity to go with that matchup and, you know, maybe also get Watford in some foul trouble and then take him off the floor.
I just don't like, I mean, if you're Will Wade, do you put Watford on Tillman?
Problem, though, is if you put Days on him, Days has been not a great post defender because he's 6'7", 245, and people can, you can score over the top of him. Like, that's,
yeah.
And who are you going to, and you're going to have to run a double over to him? Like, is it going to be Hyatt doubling over? I mean, I think that's the issue they're going to run into is, like,
they'll also play some zone.
Yeah, they'll.
It wouldn't surprise me to see him play a little zone.
Do you think they throw some 2-3 matchup at him and see what happens?
Well, like, one of the things I actually thought was hilarious, and, you know, this is maybe Will Wade being too smart for his own good, or maybe he just knows that Watford is such a lazy defender, it's probably his best bet to get him to defend a little bit. But they did play a 2-3 zone against Arkansas in the second half, and, like, Watford was out front. I'm like, what are we doing here? And it was like a regular just 2-3 zone, and I'm pretty sure like Watford and Smart were kind of on one side of the ball. You know, like Watford was on the right elbow as the right elbow defender in the 2-3 zone, and Smart was on the wing. And I'm just like, what are we doing? Like, really? Like,
no.
Just no idea. And I mean, no surprise that Arkansas ended up winning that half by like 20 points. So
LSU's a team that can absolutely go bonkers offensively. And individually, like, their defensive numbers look okay in synergy, but what you'd find is you can, if you ISO up Cam Thomas, he's a freshman, and he struggles at times playing on an island. Trenton Watford has a lot of physical tools, a lot of length, but if you ISO him on guards, or guards get on him, he can be taken advantage of. Like I just mentioned, Days is a little bit undersized on the block, so you can get some mismatches there on the post. And they don't play Josh LeBlanc all that much, but when he's on the floor, every time I've watched him and the numbers back it up, he struggles to be mobile in ball screen coverage. So I think there's some ways that Missouri can play off the bounce. They can get downhill. And as we've talked about in preseason, we were talking about before we came on, in the past, LSU could get away with that a little bit when they had Cavell Bigby-Williams and Naz Reid there. You could have guys, you know, gamble a little bit on the ball. You could have them kind of play in passing lanes because there were two really long athletic guys there to clean it up around the rim. They don't have that this year. So the back line is not optimized for that. If you can get past that first line defender, LSU's, even if Days is the low man and coming down and over to help, it's not the same as Cavell Bigby-Williams there to meet you at the rim. So I think if Missouri, especially Penson, who is good in isolation, can get downhill and really put some pressure on LSU, I think you could see Missouri find some success there. The question is, you know, is LSU just going to hit a rhythm and be a death machine on the offensive end of the floor? Like, and are you going to get into a scoring contest with them?
They're capable. And it's clear, like that's the gamble that Will Wade has made with this team. We were kind of looking at their numbers kind of beforehand, and like the hoop lens stuff, and Cam Thomas's like numbers defensively, like when he's on the court, like his impact on the team, like he's still a net positive because he's so good on offense. But it's like they are just, I mean, and with him and Watford on the court, it's just like their defense is bad,
but it still winds up being 2 to 3 points like, better per 100 possessions. Like,
yeah, like they're 148th on offense, but they're seventh in defense, but they're seventh on offense. And so when you take into account, like, so you know, Cam Thomas, he puts up numbers no matter who they play, when they play, like he's gonna get his shots and he's gonna score his points. Looking at the SEC slate, so he only played 4 minutes against Ole Miss. I don't know, did he get hurt or something?
I think so, or he may have been nicked.
But let's just look at these point outputs, just pure points. So Texas A&M opened up 32 points. They go at Florida, 28 points. They're home for Georgia, 26 points. They at home against Arkansas, 17. Home against South Carolina, 25. Alabama, home game, 21. Kentucky, away game, 18. Texas A&M, away game, 28. Texas Tech, that's a Big 12 challenge. So we'll skip to Alabama, 22, an away game. Away game at Mississippi State, 25. 25 points at home against Tennessee. 27 points at home against Auburn. 21 points at Georgia, and 25 points at Arkansas. So like it doesn't matter like where they play, who they play, Cam Thomas gets his points. He does so with mitigating efficiency, but most of the time he's pretty efficient because he gets to the line. Like half of those games he's getting to the line double digit times. His fewest amount of free throws, 3 against Texas A&M, 4 against Arkansas. But otherwise, it's like 7, 9, 13. Like that, like these are the kind of free throws that he's shooting. And he's a good shooter. So he's a guy who's going to get his points.
If you can pin down, like usually it's going to be Cam Thomas going to get a bucket. And then one of Smart or Watford will chip in. But the games where they've really struggled is when it's been 2 out of the 4 guys have played well. They need a third guy. They're a lot like Missouri. They need a third guy to really come along. And when they've struggled this year, it's been when Days, more often than not, has kind of been held in check. Realistically, what you're hoping for is that, you know, Kobe Brown and Mitchell Smith do a good job holding Days down. Collectively, do a good job on Smart. And, you know, you can offload that job a little bit to probably to Drew Smith to check him. And then you're just going to ask, you know, the rest, you're going to hope that you can do a good enough job in, on those two. And if Cam Thomas and Trenton Watford has played poorly or inefficiently in games, so you're hoping that maybe if Watford's having to make plays around the rim, Tillman's going to slow him down enough to be a factor. And that way, if Cam Thomas just goes bonkers, he's going to have to be carrying so much of the offensive load, it won't matter. To me, that's really what this looks like, is Brown and Smith shut down Days, Drew Smith locks up Smart, and Tillman's able to slow Watford enough, at least around the rim, that it puts a lot of pressure on Thomas to carry that offense. And he's efficient a lot of times because what will happen is he'll get to the free throw line and that'll juice his efficiency numbers. So that's kind of the formula for them. But Missouri will...
So I do think like one of the keys with Thomas is, you know, I think you'll probably see Mark Smith be a guy that defends him a lot. Is to make every like look that he takes from three like a really tough look. Obviously, Missouri is going to contest a lot of the mid-range shots. You know, but one of the things about Cam is
you got to run him off the line.
He'll pull up from damn near anywhere.
You got to run him off the line.
But if you run him off the line, you make him shoot pull-ups, you know, he can have one of those nights where he's 4 of 10 or, you know, 3 of 11 from 2 without letting him get to the, you know, the line 14 times. And if you do that, then I think you can, I mean, he's still going to get 25 points.
But he needs to do it on 20 shots.
Right, yeah. And, like, if he's taking 18, 19 shots, and he's scoring 25 points, I think you can live with that. To me, like, the bigger key is going to be how they defend Watford and if they can force Watford to kind of get frustrated. And I think you can do that because I feel like even the last couple of times they played LSU, like, Watford has gotten frustrated and having to, you know, defend some of Mizzou's big guys, and you know Mizzou rolls out like some good size, and you know not necessarily like the kind of guys like Mitchell Smith, but you know having to defend somebody like Jeremiah Tillman who wants to be around the rim, I think that's a way to kind of exploit his defense. So Missouri's going to go 2-0, Matt. I just feel it.
I'm going to say 1-1. I don't know which one they're going to win, but I'll say 1-1.
Hey, there's some fans in Rock'em Nation's mentions who are on the Twitter sphere who are feeling a 2-0 finish here, and certainly I think, you know, you definitely want to get a win for the seniors. Saturday is senior day for the Tigers, and the last home game for a group of guys who have really been pretty important to how the season has kind of played out. I think you're probably looking at saying goodbye to Drew Smith and Mark Smith and Mitchell Smith and Drew Buggs and Jeremiah Tillman. So it would be nice to kind of send those guys out on a win. Wish we could pack the stadium, but we can't.
Just send good vibes. Send good vibes over Twitter. That's the best I can hope for you to do there. But yeah, big week. Excited to. It's March. Championship week is almost here. I would No, not this week's unimportant, but I'm a broken record. I would just like to get to postseason basketball as soon as possible. So let's hope this week goes well, but also quickly.
Yeah, it's sort of like I mean, we've kind of said off air. We've been watching this same exact Missouri team for like 2 years, you know, and really kind of 2+ years. I realize Drew Smith is kind of like the new guy. You know, Kobe Brown has been here 2 years, but like we know what this team is capable of. There's not a lot of analysis left for Missouri basketball. Like they are who they are at this point. So there is like a little level of excitement for both of us to get to the off season and be like, hey, new people, you know. But at the same time, like, you definitely want to see this group, who you know, group of really great kids. I mean, I don't know how you couldn't absolutely just, you know, love Drew Smith, you know, Jeremiah Tillman, you know, for what he's become. Mark Smith is terrific. Mitchell Smith is like the last holdover from the Kim Anderson era, and he's, you know, fighting and scrapping. It's a group of guys who I think deserve a lot of what's the word I'm looking for here, Matt?
Respect, credit, plaudits, laurels,
adulation,
compliments,
just high fives, man. Give them high fives.
They
were ranked for 11 weeks.
It was a terrible year, Sam. Terrible year.
Don't say that. Like that's an accomplishment for this team, who, I mean, the advanced numbers don't love them. And certainly they're not without their flaws, but that, I mean, that's college basketball these days. If you can overcome your flaws on any given night, you can go a little ways. And I think like, that's why I think this team is a team that's capable of doing enough to kind of put it together and maybe surprise some people here in the next couple of weeks.
I'm as wonky and stat sheet dependent as anybody, but like, the mission critical this year has been get a tournament bid and try and win a game. And I think anybody who's paying attention to the program or writing about the program, whether it's us or any other outlet, that the course has been pretty much in lockstep, or it's been unified there, that, you know, we get fixated on kind of, you know, what's happening in this 2-game stretch, this 5-game stretch. In aggregate, they're going to do what they needed to do. They, you know, if they go 500 and they had 2 potential wins knocked off the books, that would have made them 10-8. Achieve the objective that they needed to achieve. Get into the NCAA tournament. That's what they needed to do. And I just think that that's what people have to take stock in right now. You know, we can, all of us know what's on the other side of the off season and know what a big off season it is. But I think as you look for a program that's trying to restore its credibility, these guys have done what's been asked of them. You know, for some of them, they had 2 years where injuries and inconsistency sort of defined it. But at the end of the day, they're going to get the program back to a tournament. It would be 2 times in 4 years. If they win a game, it'll be the first time in a decade. All that's still out there. And I don't think there was ever going to be an overnight fix. I don't think it's been easy for this group at all. But I think they have the potential to lead the program in a better place than they found it. And that's really what you want to do. And I think that's the hope for all of them, and they've done it in a way that I think a lot of fans can be proud of, and I'm just happy they're going to get an opportunity to have a senior day, albeit in the weirdest form possible, but they're going to get that, and, you know, they still have some opportunities in front of them to go out on a high note.
So before we get out of here, I do want to make quick mention. I'm having a beer.
I'm not. I'm drinking this very, very fine water from Analgen that has some beer brewery stickers on it, but it is not beer.
So one of the hardest working folks at our site is Karen. I think everybody knows Karen. And Karen works probably too hard at times on the site. And she made a comment a while back about how you and I always talk about whiskey. And we do, because you and I are whiskey nerds. We love our bourbon. We also enjoy Japanese whiskey, Scotch whiskey, but I think we're both at our core bourbon guys. But we do drink beer. I like beer. As Supreme Court Judge Kavanaugh said in his hearing, I like beer. So I wanted to make mention that tonight, for the podcast, I was drinking, and you can still pick this up on their online website if you're in St. Louis. You can swing by and pick it up. It is the All Nelson Everything. It is a double dry hopped Imperial IPA. It is quite tasty. It's nice and juicy. It's got some citra hops in there, so you get your citrus notes. But it's a really, really good beer, and I'm happy I opened it up for the podcast, and I think that's a good way for us to end.
We did it for you, Karen. There you go.
Yeah, she was complaining that like we never talk about beer, so there's our beer talk. If you're in St. Louis, you can go pick up that beer. St. Louis is full of fantastic breweries, so don't stop there. Go to Narrow Gauge, go to Civil Life, go to Side Project, go to Four Hands, Urban Chestnut,
all the places. Schlafly.
Nah, like skip Schlafly. Schlafly's fine.
Budweiser brewery tour.
You could do that. It is interesting.
To that little shop.
And I will say, like, the best tasting Budweiser you'll ever have in your life is on the brewery tour, because they, like, it's fresh and it's actually pretty good. And I say that as somebody who's not, like, I'm not a big lager guy. But you and I will be back next week. We will have a full review of this week with wins over Florida and LSU. Pushing Missouri back into the top 25 rankings, I can feel it. And looking forward, if everything goes their way, Matt, they can still be a 4 seed. Like, they need everybody in front of them to lose all their games, but it could still happen.
The fan base will be united behind Konzo Martin. All will be well. There will be no strife, no angst, no debate.
And who's the latest coach to be needed to be fired?
You wanted to fire Steve Peichel. That's who you wanted to.
Steve Peichel.
That's who you wanted to.
Got bounced at Pinnacle Bank. If you're a Ion College Basketball Podcast listener, Pinnacle Bank is a tough place to play. That's where University of Nebraska has their home games, and Rutgers, who is by all means an NCAA tournament team or should be. Went in there and got bounced by like 20 points, so not looking good. They should definitely fire Steve Peichel. He's not the answer, Matt. He's not the answer. Neither is Jay Wright, who couldn't get it done at Butler.
Elder was very happy he couldn't get it done. My wife was thrilled with that result. She's happy that Jay is now 1-4 in his last 5 games at Hinkle.
He's probably looking at some potential golf games in Columbia, Missouri. Maybe he'll show up and take
maybe,
a shot.
Maybe.
So we will be back next week. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Sorry that we yammered on for an additional like 5 or so minutes talking about nothing. But we'll be back next week to do that again.